Good evening, everyone. It's a blessing to be with you all again this evening. Mr. Mark, thank you for those songs. I appreciate it. I like how it tied into this morning, this evening, and I just appreciate the thoughtfulness of that. And also, I wanted to tell you, where'd you go? Where are you? Oh, there you are. I finally watched The Wiz. After all these years, he recommended, not years, whenever I first got out here, he recommended I watch The Wiz, which is like the offshoot of Wizard of Oz. And I was like, yeah, I'll watch it. And so I finally did it. And right here in real time, I'm going to use that as an analogy. The Wizard of Oz. You guys seen it? You like it? I'm a movie guy. It's one of those I remember being a very impactful one, like appreciating what movies can do. It's beautiful, great Technicolor, I think is what it's called. And also, as a kid, I think it's a healthy respect to just be scared of the witch. Like, it's just like you need to start off like with an appreciation for like sometimes things are scary. And I like that one, and I think it's a good one. But that's something that we're going to use right now because you think about the journey of that. We talked about that great Jehovah and looking at it through pilgrim minds, and this lesson's kind of a journey lesson. You think about it, they're really trying to get to Kansas, right? They're trying to get to a place and a destination, and where you get to kind of matters. How you end a thing really matters. But in journey talk, people also are kind of like, well, maybe it's not the destination. Maybe it's like the friends you make along the way. Maybe it's, you know, a tin man or a, I don't know, a line or something. It's just like, hey, enjoy the journey, roll with the punches. And it's just the act of going where you're going that's kind of like not as important as the destination, but it's close to. So you think about all the different ways of a journey works, the conclusion, the middle. Honestly, you just got to take a step. You got to go in the right direction. So maybe every single step of a journey matters. Maybe the beginning, the middle, and the end are all as essential. And today we're talking about that because this morning we talked about the end of a matter, or at least a concluding thought, about whenever you've hit a place in your life where you're like, man, I just don't know how to deal with this. This is a latter stage, an evolving nature of where I am and what should I do. And we use John Milton. And John Milton, behind the scenes, we kind of talked about John Milton and his poetry and how he observed at a later stage of his life and really coming to terms with the fact that he was losing a lot of what he felt like made him him. He felt like he, by losing his sight, was starting to lose sight of the fact that like he could contribute to society. But he still observes, even in this moment, I'm still going to wait upon the will of the Lord. And so you think about how you conclude a really good destination, how it can really benefit you. But I like this, as you go back earlier, at the age of 23, John Milton was going to school. He was going to university. He was beginning this brand new journey of his life. And he kind of observed in another popular one of his poems titled, "How Soon Hath Time the Subtle Thief of Youth." That's what its title is. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. But what he does is he observes here that like beginning something is pretty intimidating. The first steps you make feel overwhelming because you're beginning something you've never done before. And I think about that. I've talked to someone who is a loved one of mine recently. He's beginning a new job and his wife's beginning a new job. They're older than I consider them wise and just people who are role models in our life. And they just admitted like this later stage of life, like we feel like we're 3 years old. We feel like we're beginning all over again, and it's like everything before, all these years of impact, all this knowledge has kind of been like, even if they know it has been helpful to where they are, like it still feels like I'm just starting first steps all over again. Every single new stage feels like that beginning. And so my question today, or how I title this, is starting things right. Starting things off well, I suppose, is a better way to put it. Whether that's graduation or initiation or beginning a new occupation or beginning a new phase of just like your life as a family. Like how do you start off well? And so, again, I'm not the greatest guy at poetry, but I'm going to read the second half of John Milton's early text. And he says this, "That I to manhood am arrived so near, and inward ripeness doth much less appear, that some more timely happy spirits endueth, yet be it less or more, or soon or slow, it shall be still in strictest measure even, to that same lot, however mean or high, toward which time leads me and the will of heaven, all is, if I have grace to use it so, as ever in my great taskmaster's eye. And what he's concluding with is this: I feel like I've accomplished nothing so far. I feel like this new stage of my life, like I've done nothing to earn it, and I feel like I'm going in with empty pockets, and I'm not sure how to approach. And what I think is timely is he begins at the age of 23, and then later on, whenever he starts losing his sight, with the same conclusion: I will wait upon the will of God, or in this one, the will of heaven. There's something about the beginning and the ending that has to kind of speak to each other. You have to begin a thing the same way you would end a thing, and vice versa. With the will of God at the forefront of what you are seeking for your future, for your decisions, and for your life. So how do you start a new thing? And so I did kind of title this like kind of our graduation lesson. Maybe you're not graduating. That's okay. Neither am I. But what would a graduating and beginning something new look like for us? I think about verses I would share with kids, and Jeremiah 17, verse 8 is one that stands out to me. Verse 7 through 8, blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is in the Lord. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green and is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to be fruitful. This passage tells us what it takes to be fruitful in life, to receive stability, provision, protection, success. It's the trust in the Lord. Earlier in verse 5 and 6, he says, like, to trust in man, that would be like a drought. That would be like a shrub in a drought. To trust in myself and what man can do, it leaves you barren. But to trust in the Lord is fruitful and multiplying. We need to look to him and trust in his ways. But still, how do we begin a thing well? We're talking about journeys, and so I don't know what's new in your life. I don't know what new phases you're in right now. Again, but every single new stage of newness, of beginning something, feels like first steps. So whatever that looks like for you, how can you start well? We're gonna go to a passage that many of us know and probably could quote. Let's go to Matthew 28. Sticking in the book of Matthew as we did this morning, I think that it'll help us keep the context in mind. Matthew 28, this is right after the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And as the book concludes, he's gathered around with Matthew, the author, and as well as 10 others who are very close to them. And they're all gathering around their risen rabbi, this individual who has been a powerful teacher, an instructor, an individual who's demonstrated basically that he is who he says he is. Obviously by sacrificing himself, but something we'll make note of importantly is ultimately through his death and his resurrection. And as he's risen together, he gathers at the end of the book, Matthew 28, and he gathers around in verse 16, and this is what transpires. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. You think about the insecurity of starting a new thing. Think about the fears and the uncertainty and the anxiety that's responsible with that. These gentlemen were about to begin their calling. In many ways, you'd think of kind of like with graduation, again, like talking to kids where, and I remember thinking about myself in different stages of life whenever I graduated high school, it felt like an accomplishment and it should have brought me pride. It should have brought me confidence because it was well worthy of it. But it is just a next stage to get you to something that is brand new steps. And these gentlemen, for whatever reason, are feeling doubt. And maybe in reference to Thomas, we know Thomas doubted the presence of Jesus. And maybe in reference to Peter, who had denied his Lord and Master and now is feeling the emotional insecurity of being closer to him and taking on the calling that God had called for, or Christ had called for him to do going forward. We don't know whatever reason. Maybe it was just they were genuinely unsure about their future. But they are feeling this great sense of doubt and unease. And instead of addressing it and confronting it, which Jesus did, mind you, he did that back in chapter 10. But in this moment, he doesn't even take much time, at least as documented by Matthew, to assess what they're doubting. Instead, he just tells them what they should expect and how they should start. And again, this is the part most of us could probably quote. Verse 18, and Jesus came and said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. So they are beginning a new thing. They are beginning a new thing with doubts and uncertainties. They are beginning a new thing that's great and magnificent. So how do they begin? This is what Jesus charges them, and I suppose we will be charging each other as we read Matthew's text. Jesus starts off, if you want to begin a new thing on the right footing, he highlights this. Highlight him and highlight his authority. He starts off simply by saying, all authority is mine. That's it. There's almost nothing else. Why do we do what we do? Why do we gather? Why do we hope? Why do we push ourselves? Why do we worship? Why do we revere? Why do we know God's way is better than my way? Because of a singular truth. He has authority by his resurrection over death. By putting death to shame, Jesus demonstrated emphatically that not only is he a good teacher, a kind guy, a charitable man, and even a mystical sorcerer of sorts, he demonstrated that he has all authority in every part of our life. So something that can help us confront our future and confront the biggest vulnerabilities of ourself is simply by looking to him as the source of every authority. A good way my teacher put it was this way is, why does Jesus have the right to tell you anything? To tell you what to do, to tell you where to go. It's because he rose from the dead. He has all authority, and when I choose to place my acknowledgement upon him, when I choose to prioritize him and look upon him, then I start to see within myself a future that I never thought I could do myself. So how can I start a new thing? Simply by not looking to you, but looking to the one who has authority over death itself. But secondly, he highlights this. Where can I start off? Well, highlighting your mission and your goal and the place within it. That's why he says here in verse 19, he says, go. He doesn't say, okay, let's rationalize, let's discuss the insecurities, let's not discuss the fears he's have. He simply says, even with these doubts and questions you have, he simply says, go. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit. One of the greatest assets that we do have in this life in confronting the biggest questions we have is simply this, our responsibility. It's that. It's our work. It's what's been placed before us. Because as we sit there and we ponder and we wonder if we are strong enough, if we're worthy enough, if we're capable enough, and if it's all worth it in the end, sometimes we sit there looking inside when really what we should be doing is going, is working. And knowing that we have a place and we have a calling and there is fields white ready for harvest. And that's what Jesus is really demonstrating to those who are closest to him is that you have to go. I had heard it put this way that I thought was really interesting is that, and I speak for my little part of the world, of my upbringing in Christianity, I'm not saying that's here, but for my parents' generation, at least where I grew up and my grandparents' generation, things like Sabbath were not prioritized or appreciated. They were considered something from the old law that isn't necessary now and just kind of an inconvenience. And I think that there's been this really interesting adoption in the last 10 to 15 years within Christianity to see like, hey, we do need rest. It is a spiritual act to look upon God and to say that I will never work enough and I will never do enough and I have to carve out time in my life to trust you enough to rest in you. And I think that that's so awesome and that's so critical and something that my parents will admit that their generation just didn't appreciate as much. But we sometimes have an opportunity or the possibility to kind of revert the other way and just say, like, let's just take care of ourselves, nourish our souls, and make sure we're good. The point is that Sabbath was one day out of seven. The other 6 days are allotted towards something that God has made for us to do, is to go and to do, to go and to work, and to go and to bring the good news and the gospel to those beyond the farthest regions of the world. So how can I start a thing off right? Highlight him in your life and his authority over your will. Highlight his mission and his goal and your place within it. And thirdly, highlight his teaching and his way of life. I mean, that's kind of obvious. That's what we're doing here, but that's kind of the next essential part, is understand that Jesus has instructed us to observe what he has taught us. Verse 20 says, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you to do. Jesus, especially documented by Matthew, is highlighting his rabbi nature, his teaching, his wisdom. Throughout the book, the crowds are surprised and shocked and just very alert to the fact that Jesus is an authority on teaching, that his words speak volume. And, you know, I started off reading Jeremiah chapter 17, which talks about how we are, you know, planted in streams of water whenever we trust in the Lord. But it brings us to Psalm 101, verses 1 through 3, where it says, those who meditate upon the Lord, those who meditate upon his will and his law, they likewise are individuals who are planted by streams of water. So we need to understand that Jesus is the authority of our lives, and he is a wise and astute, not only man, but God, come to teach us his way, his will, and what's best forward for our life. So not only should we highlight within ourselves him and his authority, his mission and goal for our life and our place within it, not only his teaching and his way of life, but let's conclude with how Jesus concludes. Highlight and start by knowing his presence is near. And I think that there's a very important reason that Matthew ends the entire book with this simple phrase. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. The book begins with him reflecting on that Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us, God come flesh to be a part of his humanity. And throughout, we see how God would act within our lives. It's interesting in that chapter 18 verses, I believe it's 7 through 8, We know that it's a big passage that deals with addressing a brother in sin, perhaps to the point of disfellowshipping it. Yet within it, it says, where two or three are gathered in my name, there he is with us. There's this observation that we experience the Spirit and the presence of Jesus whenever we are here together, unified in his teaching and his authority. But all of this is an important reminder that as we go, we need to understand that Jesus goes with us and take his presence and his future with us wherever we go. So, how do we start a good thing off well? Where do we begin? Starting a good thing is almost as important in how you end it. John Milton or John the Baptist, we could use either of those Johns, probably wouldn't have endured quite as strongly as they did if they didn't begin with the proper steps. If they didn't resolve themselves from the onset to hold to the will of God and be able to see it out in their days. Men and women of faith throughout the ages could have given up and called it a loss had they not started with the will of God as their focus and as their guiding lens. But in our steps, our new steps, whatever it looks like, whether it be a new grade, a new generation, a new graduation, a new phase of work or a new occupation, a new grandchild, a new season without someone you once depended on, a new time of rest, or just starting to regroup and no longer take for granted the days that have been given to you. You have new steps before you. You have new opportunities before you. So start it off with this. Look to the will of God. Look to the will of God. By understanding that what he has done is made himself authority over our life. That what he has done is he has given us a plan and a purpose that should coincide with who he is and what his calling is. He has instructed us to observe his teaching and his way in this world and to share it with others. And he's told us, if we trust in him, if we see him as authority, and we go forward, that he will be with us every step of the way. Remember these bright steps for your bright future, whatever it looks like. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for allowing me to share a little bit of God's word with you all. I appreciate you all. We use this as a time to say if there is anything you need, we'd invite you to come forward. We'd invite you to meet with our elders in the library. But also, again, if you just need to talk to someone individually, I think all of us, you taking the phrase of Matthew 18, like we are all here and God and Jesus' spirit is here with us. So let's use these opportunities to our advantage. Get with someone who loves God and who loves you and depend upon them. But if there's any need you have, please come forward together as we stand or together as we sing.